Welcome to the Givergy podcast. I'm Ben, Givergy's COO. And for those of you who don't know who we are, we're fundraising experts who provide fundraising technology and consultative advice to organisations looking to raise more at events and online. 2020 is a very special year for us, and we are celebrating 10 years since we started supporting charities, and we have helped to raise over $550 million across the US, Canada, UK, Hong Kong and Australia. We're excited to share our fundraising best practices, tips and tricks through this medium, so sit back and enjoy the show. Today's episode is all about fundraising during COVID-19. We have been releasing lots of content in the past few weeks about this, but today we'll focus on two very special guests who have recently ran online campaigns since the outbreak. And both have previously run the event as venue gala dinners. So without further ado, I would like to introduce, first of all, Beth Archer, who is the Executive Director at Agra Institute based in Indianapolis, USA. How are you doing, Beth?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. Looking forward to the conversation today.
Great to have you on board. And I've also got Jessica Haler, who is the Event Director and owner of Conquer Events based in London. How are you doing, Jess?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Amazing. So we're going to start with you, Jess. We're going to find out a little bit more about you and also Conquer Events. So I know you're the owner of Conquer Events, but what does Conquer actually offer and how does it support charities?
So yeah, Conquer Events is an event management company. So we organise all sorts of events, from weddings to private parties and corporate events. But the majority of our work is, as you say, supporting charities. So we help charities organise their fundraising events. So often charities, especially small ones, need to raise lots of money for the work they're doing, but don't necessarily have the capacity within their fundraising team to put the time and effort into organising an event. So I come on board and work with them to help run the event and organise it, run it, and then help with the sort of follow-up after as well.
Right, I understand. So, and how long has Conquer been going?
It's been going 4 years now. So I was working for a charity before that, doing fundraising and including events, and then sort of launched Conquer Events off the back of that.
Oh, brilliant. So you kind of, I get it now. So you used your experience in the charity sector to then be able to do the kind of event support in the event management side.
Exactly.
So I know that you've organised the recent event, which is for the International Justice Mission. So how did you come together with them?
So, IJM, I think it was through their CEO or director. She heard about another event that I'd organised that had gone really well. But it was definitely just a word of mouth situation in that case.
What do IJM actually raise money for?
So they raise money to end modern day slavery. Across the world.
Right, okay. So I guess their reach is really far and wide.
Yeah, exactly. And then their sort of UK arm is separate to their international stream as well. So they're raising money in the UK for the work that's going on abroad.
Okay. And is this the first year of running the event?
Yes, so they have run it a number of times. I know it's been at least twice. I don't know if they've done any before that. But it was the first time that I was involved with it, although obviously it didn't actually happen in the end.
Yeah, I think that's the trauma that everyone's having, isn't it, at the minute? They've done all that planning, and then it's kind of had to... But like you, you've taken the leap and you've switched to online, which is great.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if you know this, but when the event was ran previously, do you know, like, roughly how many people there is and where it's normally held?
Yeah, so it was held at a church in central London, and I think last year there was roughly about 150 guests and it raised just over 100,000. So the aim this year was to raise 150,000. We were aiming for a few more guests that actually struggled a little bit to sell tickets. This was obviously before COVID-19, so we weren't exactly sure what that was, but I guess if you miss a few key people, you're down quite considerably on numbers. Okay. And we were going to hold it in Parsons Green, again in a church, but in Parsons Green, so slightly out of central London.
Right. Okay. And And if you don't mind me asking, how did it perform this year then? So you said your target was 150, you raised 100 the year before. How did it actually perform in the end, the online campaign?
So through the Givergy system, I think it came to about 55,000, but we actually had some matched funding on that. So including that and the gift aid and then all the tickets that were actually donated as well, because obviously the event didn't happen. We raised over 150,000, so they reached their target, which is great.
Yeah, that's amazing. And if you don't mind me asking, like you just said, from the ticket sales, how did you approach that? Because all these people are paid thinking they were going to a gala event. What was the approach to get people to donate that amount?
So the majority of the tickets that were bought were by hosts. So it was people that were, you know, friends of the charity, that knew charity really well, that were then bringing 10, 12, 14 friends to the event. So because they're supporters of the charity and were willing to kind of donate that money in the first place in order to enable other people to come to the event, it was a matter of the charity going to people and explaining the situation and asking whether they'd consider donating that money, and also would they mind also, you know, obviously letting their guests know and any other friends that they might have about the online campaign that we were doing. And that seemed to work quite well.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I can't get over your results because it's so powerful.
Yeah,
you managed to get to even more than you'd aimed to raise the year before. So it's a brilliant result.
Yeah, no, we were all delighted.
And could you just talk me through the format? Because obviously you've planned for months, I'm sure, to get that gala dinner, you know, like really amazing, and the timings and the hosts and all the different things. What did you then do? How did you then convert that into an online campaign?
Yeah, so at the event, we were only going to do one live auction lot as a bit of a warm-up for the pledge moment. We then obviously had the silent auction that was going to run throughout the night, and then we were going to do a pledge moment starting at a high figure and then working our way down. And we were planning to get people to partake in that like a normal auction, so putting their hands up, but then obviously putting it through the tablet after that. So in terms of then putting it online, it was simply a case of making the live auction lot a silent auction item, and the pledges just stayed as they were. It did work really well that we had this sort of over £50,000 match funding pot. So the sort of deadline of the online campaign was the night of when the event was going to be. And so we sort of pitched it that anyone that donated any money before then would have that amount doubled, which is obviously a really good incentive for people to give, especially if they can then see the total going up by double the amount that they gave.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think one thing I noticed when looking through the reporting for your events is the donations from the previous year was, let's just say, something like 50. And then this year was, I think it was something like 450 donations, which is unbelievable. But how did you line up the donor matching?
That was the charity just speaking to, I guess, previous donors, board members, the people that are very close to the charity. So yeah, that was through their personal relationships, basically. And then as you said, there was obviously a lot more donations this year in terms of amount of people that donated, and that was simply because obviously at an event you can only pitch to the people in the room, but with this IGM I was able to push it out to their whole database, and because they do have a strong network of supporters, I think they have quite a lot of regular donors as well. That email could go out to all of those people, all the people that received their newsletters, and so it got really pushed out far and wide and a lot further than 150 or so people that would have been in the room on the night.
Brilliant. It just shows the power, doesn't it, of obviously you having to switch. People are really connected and actually realised, you know, you still need support. But then having the donor matching, the donation match, obviously has pushed it to like unbelievable numbers. So God, that's so powerful. And hopefully many other charities might have donors out there that would consider doing that, because that just shows how quickly the conversion can go up if you have that level of support.
Yeah, and obviously it's hard to know and to measure if we hadn't had that match funding, would that have made the difference? it's often hard to know what is the thing that inspires people to give, whether it's the copy in the email you write, whether it's a personal relationship with someone that's involved with the charity. It's just, I guess, without actually speaking to those people individually and asking them why they gave, it's very hard to know. So it's just a bit of trial and error, I guess, over the years.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like you said, being able to open it up to the whole database, for you, I think, has proven that can be so much more powerful as well. Because we, as you know, we work with a lot of charities, and sometimes charities are a bit fearful of opening it up to the rest of the database or putting it on Twitter. And they're like, no, only the people in the room would like to give. But I think in your example, it's kind of proven, I'm sure, many people that did, you know, donate may not have even been attending that event. So really, really powerful.
Yeah, I guess it is therefore important to consider other points in the year that you are asking people for money, because you don't, that's probably people of charities' concerns that they're constantly bombarding people, asking them for other campaigns. But I guess this is just such a unique situation where you can say to people, we wanted this event, this is the amount we wanted to raise on the night. We couldn't do that because of COVID-19, but we as a charity still need the money to continue our work. And that's why we're coming to you again in this, you know, unique situation. It's not just another email asking for money. It's a very specific need in a very specific time.
Yeah, absolutely. It is such a weird time. And I think loads of charities that I'm speaking to at the moment are saying about the ask, and should they ask and shouldn't they ask? And it's that's why we're doing so many of these as well. So yeah. But obviously for yours, it was really, really successful. So before we ask more questions, I'm going to find out a little bit more from you, Beth, around the Agra Institute. So Beth, how long, first of all, have you worked for them?
I always laugh and say I've been there 150 years. I actually started in 1991, so what are we approaching, 30 years that I have been with Agra Institute.
Wow, 30 years. And what exactly do you support?
So Agra Institute is a nonprofit that advances leadership development for the agricultural industry. And so the money that we raise supports programming related to leadership development for adults who are engaged in some aspect of the agricultural industry. And that might be production agriculture, it might be agribusiness, it might be all of the allied industries that support the agricultural industry. But essentially what we're doing is helping adults advance their ability to be better leaders for the industry. And so all money we raise is used to support programming for that mission.
So 30 years is an amazing length of time, and I think it's the longest amount of time I've ever heard of a person working for the same charity, which is truly amazing. But is there a personal link to what you're raising money for?
I suppose. First of all, I just really believe in the mission of our organization. I was raised in a farming family and been involved in some aspect of agriculture my entire life. And so being a part of an organization that helps to advance an industry that I'm so passionate about, and being able to help those who lead that industry be better at their skills and their abilities to do that work, is something I get very passionate about and I very, very much believe in. My educational background is in high school education, but helping adults has been just a dream come true for me for a lot of long years, for many years, and the opportunity to support that is what makes me believe in what we do.
So just so I understand, you went from like high school education, and then did you go straight into fundraising?
I did not. I actually worked in the agriculture industry in some consulting work for a couple years, and then discovered this organization and the work to build leadership capacity. And I'm a one-person office, so we don't have a lot of staff. So that means that if you're going to run the organization and have the resources you need to do the work that we are called to do, we have to be involved in fundraising. And so I've learned over the years how to raise the money and the financial support we need to enable the work that we accomplish.
Right. Okay. Now I understand it. So, I mean, amazing. I still can't get over the 30 years. That's a true achievement, and a one-man band in a sense as well. So in terms of the event, how many events do you do a year? Is it just this one, or do you do multiple?
We actually do two major events, and this one event that we accomplished in March is our biggest event, and then we do a smaller event later in the year. And our other fundraising efforts are really related to personal asks and more of an annual contribution campaign, which is mostly just fundraising letters and emails and a call to action for financial support. But the event we held in March is our major fundraising event.
Okay. And is it normally, you know, in the previous year, is that normally like a gala-style event?
Yes. We've been doing this event for 26 years. So we've had a lot of history of running this event over the years. And it's mostly been a live and a silent auction, a live event, a gala kind of event. And then the last 6 years, we've added the online platform bidding system. And so we've done online events as a component of our gala for about 6 years now.
Right, okay. But I suppose that's quite a big jump to go from, you know, having the legacy of the event normally being a staffed or a gala event for 26 years. Were you nervous about, you know, just completely switching to only being online?
We were a little bit nervous. The beauty was that we were already set up with all our live and our silent auction items posted on the online platform. And so transferring or, you know, just leading people to doing solely an online event really was just a matter of communication and encouraging people to participate in that way. The beauty was that we found more people participating than we've had in any other year. And so we were able to really connect wider group of folks to be involved in supporting of our event.
Right, okay. And how did you communicate that out? Did you talk about, you know, COVID-19 when you had to switch? What did you do?
Obviously, we were in the midst of a shutdown and stay-at-home orders. And so people were well aware that we weren't going to be allowed to hold an in-person event. And so we didn't spend a lot of time trying to communicate the reasons why. We spent a lot more time just communicating how we were going to conduct the events and how people could engage and participate and what the tools look like and how they could use the Givergy platform and what opportunities they might use to connect with others who normally would be at the event. We encourage them to use various kind of Zoom or Google Hangouts or other kind of platforms to get together virtually during the time that would have traditionally been our event, in order that they could have some connection and some personal contact with each other.
Oh, that's brilliant. And did you get many comments afterwards about it all?
Most all comments we got were very, very positive. Everybody was appreciative of the fact that we continued to go ahead and hold the event. They appreciated the way we communicated the information to them. They appreciated the fact that they had an opportunity to continue to support the organization, even though we were in the midst of a crisis, you know, worldwide crisis. I think they were committed to making sure that we had the resources to continue our mission and recognize that we needed to have the financial resources to go on. And frankly, I think folks appreciated having something joyful to participate in and something that they could get excited about that they believe in.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I think it's, at the moment in the media, it's a bit doom and gloom all the time, isn't it, as well, and no one's focusing on the positive stuff or different things like that. So I can imagine, especially in the focus that you have, it would be really, really well received with the way that you've put it across as well. And
we were pleased with our participation and very excited that folks sort of embraced the change. And to be honest with you, it may give us a whole new experience to evaluate going forward in terms of how we conduct our events and how we communicate with our supporters post-2020.
Yeah, and I think that's something that so many people are talking about. It's even in our personal lives now, you know, weekends we're all doing so many different things that are now virtual, like virtual parties or virtual catch-ups or coffee catch-ups. I think 2020 will not only change our personal lives, but I think it will also probably change fundraising for the future as well.
I believe so.
And if you don't mind me asking, so I know you mentioned that guest participation was massively increased, which was amazing. Did you also find, you know, the overall kind of amount you raised, was that really far different from the year before?
We were able to raise pretty close to the same amount of money that we would have in our in-person kind of gala event. And so from a financial standpoint, we didn't realize a significant change in our fundraising efforts.
It's amazing. It's a great story, I think, from both of you. And you can definitely both tell that in your examples, the online fundraising has been a really great success. And I think for our listeners, that's going to really inspire others as well, because I'm honestly speaking to so many charities at the moment, and people want to take that leap, but they're a little bit fearful, especially for charities that have never done online before as well. So I think just hearing, you know, both of your stories is fantastic as well. So I'm now going to ask a few more questions, and it's open to, you know, to both of you to kind of comment. So the first one I'm going to ask is, what tips could you give fundraisers that are considering right now running an online campaign?
Well, I would say definitely do it. I think it's obviously there's a way up of whether, if you had an event planned for the next couple of months, whether you postpone it to the autumn or to the beginning of next year. But I think the most important thing is that you do something, because then otherwise you're just kind of missing out a year of, I guess, event fundraising. So I think if it's a matter of doing nothing, then I think definitely doing something online is better than nothing, but also could be as good as, if not better than, your actual event.
And I can see it.
Terms of the amount based anyway.
Yeah, no, thank you. And Beth, would you like to comment on that one?
I would echo what Jessica said, of course. And I mean, I don't think any of us would ever agree that doing online versus an in-person event is preferable. I think we would agree the in-person connections, the personal contact is certainly by far the most effective way. But the online does give us an alternative that has been successful, at least in our cases, and certainly a worthwhile consideration. I think what we found was being very proactive and trying to really send out positive messages and using some of our affinity groups to engage with each other to kind of boost the enthusiasm was a really positive addition. And I think it's going to play out that going forward, we'll have greater energy between those groups for future events.
Yeah. And it sounds, I think, especially for, you know, the way that your appeal has gone as well, Beth, it's changing the donor relationships, isn't it, in a way, and actually probably being, I think for some fundraisers, it might make them more comfortable with the ask, because weirdly that can be one of the challenges, isn't it, is kind of connecting with the donors and asking, where I think before online, some people saw it as maybe uncouth and didn't like the concept. Where now, like you two, it's been proven that it kind of can work.
Yeah, I agree.
The other challenge that I'm finding at the moment when speaking to fundraisers is, because so many people have been furloughed or, you know, laid off, there's so many charities where even the bigger ones, where there's been like a whole team, and that whole team have been there to, someone's uploaded the auction item, someone's done the email campaign. There's all these different people, and I spoke to a lady yesterday, and she was like, "Ben, it's just me." She's like, "I've gone from having a whole team to just myself, but I desperately need to raise money." But she said to me, "I'm so fearful, because I've never really kind of done it on my own." Is there any tips you can give, you know, for either of you when, you know, working kind of solo and having the whole responsibility? For you, Jess?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think in terms of being fearful of doing the ask, I know that's slightly different to what you asked, and I'll get onto that. But I think people generally, I found, want to help. And actually, in this time, if they have been furloughed themselves, so I'm talking more about the supporters of the charity, I think people can feel a bit purposeless, that they don't, because they're not working every day, they're not having a reason to get out of bed in the morning. Actually, in helping to do things in other ways, by donating some money or bidding on some of the lots, I think people do want to help. And actually, I guess on that note, it might be that there are some supporters that obviously are all experts in their different fields, might have capacity to help the charities. And I don't know how easy that is to get in touch with people to ask if they'd be willing to volunteer, whether that's even just sort of writing the copy for the email that's going to go out, actually having a supporter's point of view on that kind of thing might be really helpful. But I know that's not always easy to kind of forge those relationships if the relationship doesn't lie with that particular person. But I wonder if there is a way to get supporters involved with the actual implementation of the online campaign.
Yeah, no, that's a really good suggestion. I think that's a brilliant suggestion, actually, because like you said, there's even, you know, my own personal friends, they're going a bit stir crazy in the house at the moment, going, God, I wish I had something to do.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Yeah, if you have that network of supporters, reaching out to them to ask for help now, I suppose there's never been a time when they've probably got time to help you.
Yeah.
And Beth, like you said, it is normally just yourself. Is that is what you were saying, wasn't it, earlier? What advice can you give?
You know, I thought about that question. You said that in advance, and I thought about that quite a lot. And I think, you know, being engaged with our supporters, we're a much smaller organization. So we have, I mean, I know all of our supporters personally, and I can call them. And so using our phones, which are still working and still allow us to be socially distant, using our phones and calling people and encouraging people to connect with others. And as Jessica, as you said, giving them maybe a script to follow, so to speak, if you will, about why the mission is still valuable, still important, still needs the financial resources to continue, and using a time to be empathetic towards some of the conditions that folks are experiencing, but yet realizing that down the road, we still have as important a mission as ever, and that financial support is critical in order for us to keep going.
No, that's good. And I think one for you, Beth, as well. You know, other than the online campaign, what are you focusing on at the moment, as well as a charity, during this isolated time, other than the kind of online campaigns that you've been doing?
You know, this has been a wonderful time to do a lot of planning and pre-planning for, you know, the next half of our year. And so we're spending a lot of time in that. We're doing a lot of time talking with our donors about how their support has mattered over the past, and how it's going to matter going forward. So we're just using this time to really talk to our friends and our stakeholders and those who make our organization successful.
Get it. And other than, like we just talked about, are you doing any of the other asks during the next couple of months? Because you've just done the online campaign, but, you know, at the moment, for the foreseeable, everyone's expected to be staying at home for, I would imagine, at least the next few weeks, if not more. Had you planned to be asking your donors for any more support?
From our end, we're probably not as active on the asking for specific amounts of financial support at this point. We've done the big campaign. We're going to let things kind of settle down for a little bit. It's more about spending our time showing our appreciation right now. Toward the end of the year, then we will come back, or maybe perhaps into August and September, we'll come back and do a lot more heavier work on asking for financial support and giving them tools and processes and things to do to support us.
Okay, brilliant. And
Ben, can I add something?
Of course.
On that. So I received an email from a charity, and their event is later in the year, so obviously haven't quite decided what's happening with that. But so in their email, what they said is that a number of their supporters had been in touch with them asking how they could help. And so the email was simply saying, if you'd like to help, please get in touch with us and we can see what we can do. So it's almost asking the supporter to be active in asking. And ultimately, that probably would end up being that the charity would ask them for money as opposed to anything else. But I just thought it was quite interesting to, instead of saying, please give us money, we need it, to say, if you'd like to help, please get in touch with us and we can have a conversation about it.
And what is the, when they, because I like this, when they then email in, what kind of things are they going to ask them to do? Do you know?
I don't know. I suspect it would be more of a conversation that the charity would have with the donor or the supporter. And they're probably people that have given in the past. It probably is going to be a financial ask. But having said that, you know, if it was that the charity needed help in a more practical way, that could be a really interesting way of getting people to do things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think with everything at the moment, a lot of charities are changing their approach and doing new ideas. And I think, you know, that this is kind of one of my my final questions or comments for you, Jess, first is, you know, so many charities and fundraisers out there are struggling and are finding this time really, really hard, and it's worrying them, which I totally understand why. You know, it doesn't have to be event related, but is there any kind of parting advice that you could offer to them for you know, worldwide? Because I'm speaking to so many, and everyone kind of just, I think they just want some kind of nice words on getting through the next few months.
Yeah, I think I probably reiterate in terms of using the supporters that you have already, because people do want to help. And also, as Beth said, it is a time where there is more time. And so actually building those personal relationships with supporters is really important. And that, you know, you can do that over Zoom. But I guess more broadly, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. We are going to come through this, and ultimately, everyone's going to want a really big party at the end of it. So I think planning an event is probably not a bad idea.
Absolutely. And Beth?
I'm not sure I can add much more to what Jessica said. I thought that was well stated. And I think having messages of hope and, you know, sort of joy and a little bit of, you know, we can keep on doing business as usual, even though it's not as usual any longer, but showing that we're keeping things moving forward is a confidence builder for everybody. And then I think also, you know, just spending time getting to know folks in a different way than we've had an opportunity before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the comments that both of you have given are fantastic, and exactly what I think a lot of charities want to do as well is, you know, so many fundraisers want the time to actually be able to connect with their donors and ring them up and really nurture those relationships. So, yeah, hopefully, I'm sure for everyone now, they're going to have the time to really spend time with them, get to know their donors in a much more personal level. And like you said, Jess, you know, from a supporter point of view, I think asking them for help and support is a really, really good initiative. So that is the end of our podcast. So I'm going to say a massive thank you to both you, Jess, and Beth.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed
it. It's been really fun. Great to have a conversation. Yeah, it's
been
great.
Brilliant. Well, we really hope that you've enjoyed today's episode and found the content informative. And we would love to hear your thoughts. So feel free to email podcast@giveyou.com. And you can also make suggestions of future topics or guests you would love to hear on our show. So thanks again. And don't forget to hit subscribe or follow to listen and look out for our future podcasts. Thank you.